Okay, good evening, everyone. First, as we start a new series here tonight, God willing, first wanted to thank the Fines again for rehosting this next series, God willing, five-part series on Taras HaMishpacha. I also wanted to thank the organizers, Phil and Yitz, and everybody else who helps to organize this year, and also welcome my father-in-law, who's visiting from the United States. Last year we did, my father was here, so Baruch Hashem, this time we have the schus of having my Zmira's father here. Okay, so as we mentioned, so we're going to be doing a five-part series, God willing, on Taras HaMishpacha, a little bit of a review, hopefully, for some halachos that you may hopefully already are familiar with to some degree, and if not, you'll learn a little bit, and if you are, then hopefully it should be a little review, and this time around, maybe you'll have a little bit more practical experience with the topic than you may have had when you did this with chassam classes, where it's all gibberish. You don't know what they're talking about. They talk about all these ideas. What is that? Huh? Yeah, that sounds nice. What does that mean, right? And they say you'll understand when you actually get married. So this time around, it could be that it'll be a little bit more understandable and practical with life experience. Okay, we're going to start with a couple, as we have on the source here, a couple of the introductory topics. Tonight is going to be a little bit more introduction and background and a little bit less practical bottom line psak halacha. Starting next week, we're going to do, again, it's going to be a combination of the background, the basic understanding of the halachos, what they're based on, and how they apply to Zman Hazeh, and also some very, very practical issues that come up all the time, really. Okay. So the first question that we're going to focus on briefly is, what is the significance of learning Taras HaMishpacha during this period of the year? This is a little bit of a complicated question. We're not going to go into all the details, but just some basic background as to what this is doing here. So as you may be familiar with, the period of this time of year is known as Shovim, or Shovim Tat by some. Shovim is the abbreviation, the Rosh Tevos for the Parashios, beginning this past week's Parasha Shmos, Va'era, Bo, Bishalach, Yisro Mishpatim. That's Shovim, and then Truma Tetzaveh is the Tat, the Tough and the Tough. That's Shovim, and the custom has become, over the years, to engage in certain types of self-introspection during this time of year. If you look at the sources here, we'll just a little glance at these sources very briefly. Source number one, this is the Magen Avraham in Siman Tav Reish Pehe. So he notes here, Yesh Noagin Bisharam Uberes. Again, note the language very carefully. There are some that have the custom during a leap year, Ligboa Tanis Bechol Yom Hei Miparsha Shovim Tat, to establish a fast day on every Thursday during the Parshios of Shovim Tat. So that's the comments of the Magen Avraham here. I guess we see that it was the night. It was partially 9:30 time. Are we starting every week from 9:20 or?
I guess we're going to start at 9:30.
People just didn't know. Just didn't know. Okay, we officially started at 9:20 tonight. We'll decide afterwards what's starting. Next week, if you check the groups, check the time for this year, so we know what time it starts. And if you can't come until 9:30, let us know, so we'll know that you take that into account. Okay. So the Magen Avraham's version here. Does everybody have a source sheet?
Over here.
There are more over here.
Just to show.
Okay. Be careful of getting chewed up by the materials. The Magen Avraham's version of this idea here is, he specifically mentions the idea of a leap year. Again, it's not clear if this is Daka or Lav Daka, but it sounds like he's talking about specifically a leap year. And the custom that he's bringing down is to fast on Thursdays of Shovim. The Shari Tshuva, in the same Siman in Or HaChaim, in source number 2, also has a similar idea. He says, "Be'inyan Tana Shovim, concerning the fast days of Shovim, Midag HaMes'anim B'mzinos Elu B'shana Pshuta Shovim Levad." The custom of those that fast in these parts, in the country, the area of Europe that he lived in, during a Shana Pshuta, during a regular year, meaning a non-leap year, they only fasted during Shovim. U'B'shana Mu'uberes Mosifim Tana, and during the extra months of the leap year, they added in Truma and Tetzaveh. So again, it's not clear exactly what this is based on. There are a number of different theories about exactly how this works, which we're not really going to have time to get into now. But the Shari Tshuva, just to note, the Shari Tshuva's version is slightly different than the Magen Avraham's. The Shari Tshuva is looking at show the fasts of Shavuot taking place every year, not just on leap years, every single year. And the leap year is when you add in the extra two fasts because you have extra weeks, so you add in the 2 weeks of Truma and Tetzaveh. The Magen Avraham apparently seems to be, at least, looking at the Shana Mubaris, at the specifically during the leap year. There are also other discussions that they have here. Some opinions have said that maybe you fast on Monday and Thursday, not just Thursday. There's a whole bunch, a whole range, actually, of different options here. What happens with two B'Shvat balls during those days, Rosh Chodesh, all sorts of interesting discussions that they have about Shavuot. In these two sources, they don't really discuss so much exactly what it's based on. Basically, if you look at the writings of the Arizal, I think it's in his Perash al Torah. This is quoted in the Be'er Hetev, which is another one of the commentaries to the Shulchan Aruch. The Be'er Hetev is not, I did not have on the Bar Ilan, so I couldn't put it here. But the Be'er Hetev quotes the Arizal, and he says that basically explains that Al Pi Kabbalah, this is this period of the year of Shavuot is considered to be a very opportune time to try to do some introspection and tshuva and kapara for certain types of averus, specifically averus related to family life, such as taras mishpacha, tumas keri, certain types of improper emissions, and other things like that, which are, again, somewhat related to the fact that Parsha Shmo starts with the Shiva Mitzrayim, so somehow this is considered to be some sort of kapara. Again, the details are a little bit obscure and a little bit too Kabbalistic for me, especially when I couldn't look up the Arizal inside. I didn't have the opportunity to look it up inside. But again, this is the time period that people use for Tikkun Amidos and tshuva related to these types of chatayim, according to many of the commentaries. If you know more about this than I do, please feel free to add in. Again, there are other ideas also. Parsha Shmos is last week's parsha. We talk about how the Jewish people used to be they had a lot of children. So some commentaries say that maybe it's based on the fact they had a lot of children. That's the connection to family life, this section. Again, there are a lot of different theories here. But suffice it to say that there is some sort of connection between the parshios of Shavuot and these types of halachic and hashgafic issues. And as we see from the sources, in those times the custom was to fast during the period of Shavuot. So today, many of these Sifrei Chassidus discuss the idea that today they were not so into fasting. Today people are weaker. Fasting often takes away from a person's spiritual avodas Hashem. And therefore, the Balei Chassidus, led by the Nesiva Shalom, has a pamphlet on this. There's a number of other Sfarim. The Nidze Gavriel, or Gavriel Zinner, also has a piece on this. You can take a look at the Sefer Piskei Tshuvos in this seminar of Tuf Reish Pei. He has a number of other comments from Sifrei Chassidus on this topic. And basically they say that today we shouldn't really fast. Rather, we should stress learning Torah specifically and our immersion in the world of Torah, our limitation on Gashmias. And today, of course, in the recent times, it's become very common all over the world to have review series on Taras Mishpacha during this time, specifically for the reasons we gave before that are related to the family life. So that's basically the background to the series of Taras Mishpacha here and in many other places during the weeks of Shavuot specifically. Okay. From that, let's move into the actual discussion of Nida. Again, we're going to do one or two other hashkafic introduction points here before we begin some of the bottom line halachos and practical issues. I want to make one other point also, which I think is very, very important, and that is that sometimes it's understood that that Hilchos Nida and Taras Mishpacha is mainly about the wife, mainly about the woman. She's the one that becomes the Nida. She's the one that has to go through the process of purification. She's the one that has to go through to the mikvah, and the husband sort of takes a back seat. Now, it's true that obviously this is specifically a woman's mitzvah, and this is an area where the woman has to really take full responsibility for everything that happens. But at the same time, I personally, I believe that the husband, it's very, very important for the husband to be crucially involved in the observance of Hilchos Nida. And that, I think we can divide this up into two aspects. The first one is obvious. The first one is that if the husband does not accept and agree with the rules of Taras Mishpacha, then you cannot have Taras Mishpacha without him, meaning the whole concept of the wife and the husband being separate and the harchakos and all the details, if the husband doesn't accept it, it can't happen, right? That's just obvious. So that's number one. That's one aspect which for sure the husband has to be part of. And I think we can suggest also that the husband also needs to be involved in other areas as well of Taras Mishpacha to the degree that that he is he's capable. And this can take different roles. I would say that as the background, I would say that there's a concept in Torah, in Chazal, that what's called lifnei iver lo titen michshol misayel lidei over avera. There's a concept that if you help other people to sin, then that is considered to be a sin for you as well. Again, there are different levels of this. Lifnei iver is assumed to be d'oraisa. Misayel lifnei over avera is a lesser level, but a rabbinic violation of helping in some form another Jew violate a sin, and that's clear from the halacha that is problematic to help somebody else violate a sin. The contrasting side of that, the reverse side, of course, is to help somebody else do a mitzvah, right? If you help somebody else do a mitzvah, so you certainly get a large amount of schar for that. And again, there are other makors we can discuss for this as well, but for now, I think it suffices it to say that this is the degree at which I think that the husband is definitely able, in these types of halachas, to support his wife, again, to give her support, whatever type of support that is. Hopefully it's not physical support during the time period of Nida itself, but at least the mental, the spiritual support, and also helping her through the period in other ways as well. Just two examples I can give you, three examples really. The idea of calculating the Vesis period, which we'll discuss in a couple of weeks. The idea of calculating when is the time period that they have to abstain in the preparation for the fact that her period might be coming. Calculating the Vesis, as we'll see, and as you may remember, is not the simplest thing in the world. You need a calendar. You need to sit down. You got to calculate very carefully. It's worthwhile for the husband to help the wife calculate. And this, of course, is also from personal experience. Sometimes my wife will come to me and say, okay, when is the Vesis? And I'll say, I don't know, I wasn't paying attention. I thought you knew, right? And I'm like, okay, now what do we do, right? Now we're stuck. Whose fault is that? It's not only her fault, it's also my fault. So that's one important point, which the husband should be definitely partially involved in, if possible. Reminders to do some of the bedikos during the Shiva Nikim, which again we'll discuss more at length. Checklist of things to do before going to the mikvah to make sure nothing is forgotten along the way. All these kinds of things are areas where the husband can express support, not just mentally and emotionally, but also practically in the details of keeping the hilchos nida. And I think that that really makes for a deeper, more solid relationship between the husband and the wife. I think it fosters a sense of cooperation and camaraderie, which is obviously important for marriage in general. And again, we don't have enough time in this class to do all the other aspects of marriage. This class, by definition, is going to have to be focused mainly on Hilchos Nida, but certainly these types of things are important for a marriage. There are some studies that, I forgot where, that pointed out that that in general, as a rule, generally speaking, husbands that helped out in the kitchen more, generally speaking, had a more effective and a stronger marriage than husbands that did not help out in the kitchen. And Harai, here, the fines, Eitan, I assume this the chicken here is, you made the chicken, right?
Yeah.
Okay, Baruch Hashem, so we have a wonderful role model for ourselves here. But that, again, the same similar idea here also, the more the husbands help out in these types of areas, Lanius Dati, I think this is something which is hopefully can strengthen our marriages, which of course is a very, very important and Torah and secular ideal as well. Okay, one other point in terms of the hashkafa, and then we'll go into the halacha here. Take a look at the Gemara in source number 3. This is a very famous Gemara, and again, yesh l'tagnik, also one can ask questions about this and make problems with the Gemara. But I think it's nevertheless, despite the issues, it's a nice source to keep in mind for the whole background of Hilchos Nida. This is from the Gemara in Nida Daf Lamed Aleph Amud Beis. Tanya Harabi Meir Omer. We have learned in a brayso that Rabbi Meir used to say, "Bivnei ma'am ratora nida l'shiva." Why does the Torah say that a nida is separated for her husband for 7 days? Because if they didn't have the 7-day separation period, he would become too used to her, and he would get tired of her. It's the same thing over and over again, run of the mill, no break in between, and it's all rote, it's all stale. Therefore, Amra Torah tehitzmeya shivayam. Therefore, the Torah says you should become tame for 7 days. Beautiful line here that the wife should be chaviva, should be special and treasured to the husband the very same way as she was when they got married, when they entered the chuppah, the same way that the husband and the wife looked at each other at that point. Hopefully, I don't know if you remember how many of you had googly eyes under the chuppah, but whatever the context is, certainly the time period of the actual wedding is a very, very special time period in a person's life. So one of the goals of Hilchos Nida, according to Rabbi Meir here, is to bring back that special feeling every single month to the relationship of the husband and the wife, to keep their relationship new, to have a new mini chuppah, so to speak, to get together at that point every month. And again, obviously, we don't keep the Torah only because of these kinds of reasons. The halachos stand on their own, but certainly, as Rabbi Meir tells us here, the reasons behind it, at least certain possible reasons that may share some sort of perspective with us, definitely should influence a little bit of our mentality when it comes to observing these halachos and what could be behind them. Today, of course, it's not 7 days anymore. Today we have closer to 12 days, which I guess, as they say, fondness, absence makes the heart grow fonder, right? So here, having 12 days instead of 7 days, maybe is even more of a bracha to have even a fonder heart. But again, this is a nice idea to keep in mind as we go through some of the halachos here of Hilchos Nida. Okay. I think your child's crying. Okay. That being the case, let's move on into some of the halachos here. We're going to do now, in the next section here, I thought I put this on the sheet. Ooh, I forgot. I had a section here that I had on the sheet, but then my file on the computer got erased before I had a chance to save it, unfortunately. So I'll just read it to you. Just a very brief outline of the different sections of the process of the menstrual cycle. Hopefully by now most of you are familiar with this, but again, just to give you the breakdown of the steps here, and basically the next four or five shiurim, we're going to be going through each of these sections, hopefully a little more detail. Number one, okay, the woman has to become a nida. Okay, that's obviously the first step. That's every month. So there's a time period when again, we're not going to go through the medical background now. I assume by this point, most of you are familiar with it. When we teach chasanim, the medical background, we have to explain a little bit more. But basically, every month the woman has a certain amount of blood, which again is based on the hormonal menstrual cycle, which comes based on the buildup of certain things inside the woman's body. And then if certain things don't happen, if a baby is not conceived, so then some part of the endometrial lining is let out and it bleeds, and that's basically the source of the nida period of the month. Again, obviously, more details you can look at the medical books. And we're not going to get into it now. The Torah says that every month when this happens, when the woman sees a flow of blood, that is considered to be the Torah aspect of Hilchos of becoming a nida. As we'll discuss shortly, there may be a Torah requirement that there has to be a hargasha, which is some sort of feeling of becoming a nida, which we'll discuss very very shortly in a couple minutes. Once that takes place, so the husband and the wife are responsible to make sure that they do not come in contact with each other, both in terms of having marital relations, as well as in terms of coming into close contact with each other, either by touching, more affectionate contact, obviously, as well as other kinds of indirect contact, which we'll discuss, God willing, in a couple of weeks. Those are known as the harchakos. Harchakos are mostly derabanan, but harchakos, of course, are very important in making sure that no one violates, God forbid, the d'oraisa level of nida, of actually having relations during that time. The first part of the cycle is known as the 5 days, which we'll discuss. The 5 days, most of that time, there is blood anyway. The woman is seeing blood, so there's not really much to talk about. But the custom, as we'll see again a little bit later, is to wait 5 days before beginning the purification process. At the end of the 5 days, so then we engage in what's called a hefsek tahara, which is basically the woman is going to take what we call a bedikah cloth, which again we'll discuss obviously a little more. Take a bedikah cloth and basically check the area to see if there is any blood remaining, and if it's found to be clean, so then we can say that the hefsek tahara has basically been the cutoff point that there is no more blood for this period. And then the next day begins the shemen akim, the 7 days which we pass. And again, we're not going to go into these details as well. The source for shemen akim is not midoraisa. It's actually based on a different concept in the Torah called the zava, the woman who sees blood not during the regular time of the period, but again, Chazal or Machmir here for a number for a lot of different things, because again of the chumrah of the prohibition of nida, because nida is an isser karis. To have actual relations during that time is an isser karis. Chazal therefore were Machmir on a lot of different things. One of the chumras is the shivan akim, which means that basically for 7 full days the woman has to be clean, completely naki. For all those 7 days, she will be engaging in bedikas, in checking to see whether she is clean. And again, there has to be she wears white. And again, we'll discuss all these things in more detail. At the end of the shemen akim, she is clean for the whole time. So then, the night of following the 7th complete day is when the tevila takes place. When she goes to the mikvah. The last point is, of course, when you go to the next round, so then we have the concept of veses, that based on the previous parts of the cycle, so you have to calculate the day that you expect that the period will show up again, and during that day we have special halachas, the shas veses, of again, not engaging in relations, and according to some physical context as well, which again we'll discuss in a couple of weeks. There are different time periods for the veses. There are 2 or 3 different days or nights or periods of Desis, which we'll have to discuss. But that's the concept of the Desis. And at the end of that, so hopefully the last year, we'll spend some time talking about some of the issues related to birth control. Again, I'm not going to give you all the practical details because, of course, every case is a little bit different. But at least you're familiar with some of the background issues that go into the halachas of birth control, some of the issues of tuma of giving birth, when at what point the nida period kicks in at time of birth, as well as other aspects, very briefly, of certain gynecological procedures, which are unfortunately more common than we'd like, than we would hope. Some issues that are that one should be aware of in terms of those types of procedures. Okay, let's start with the concept of hargasha. We're going to begin with this. I would say before we continue here, just again, keep in mind that a lot of the halachas we're going to discuss are, it's hard to give a very practical psak in every single situation because many situations are different. The most important thing I can tell you to do in general in terms of hilchos nida is that any time that you have any sort of question at all, you or your wife should ask a shayla. Again, if you know the halachas, you know things are clear, you know, you can basically follow the rules, but any time that you're not sure in terms of what things look like or any kind of complications at all, don't necessarily assume that it's a problem. Don't necessarily assume that it's okay until you've, you know, checked it out with a rub, because oftentimes the rules are a little bit more lenient than certain women think, and as well as certain men. You know, I can't even tell you how many times people have come to me or to my wife, and I'm sure other rabbanim have had the same experience, where they came and they told us they thought that they were in need of something happened a week ago, and now they're asking a follow-up shayla, and then when we thought about it, we realized that there was good reason to believe why in the first place that may never have been a problem. So it's always important to check. And if you ever think that, you know, you're not sure if a bedikah cloth, if something looks like it's a problem, and obviously it must be a problem, it's not always so simple. It always pays, again, until you get a lot of experience with these types of things, it always pays to ask a question. You know, rabbanim in general are very encouraging of asking shaylos in this area. It's not something to be ashamed of. It's something that that should be encouraged. And again, if you're too machmir, it's problematic. And if you're too mikkel, it's problematic. So you have to get everything just right. Very, very important to get rabbinic guidance here. In terms of Yabidimin, so again, I assume you all have your Rabbanim that you speak to here. There are plenty of Rabbanim around, just to name a few if you need names. So, of course, so I'm available for these types of questions in general. People come to my wife also because she was trained in Nishmat as a Yuatzet Halacha, so she has training in the area of Hilchos Nida. People that are, you know, wives that are more comfortable speaking to her directly, of course, that's definitely an option. Of course, Rav Orlean is available for Shilas in this regard. Rav Hadaya, we've spoken to about different cases before. He's available. A number of other Rabbanim that are available in the community. I don't know who else wants their names to be given out, but okay, Rav Tzanani, if he's willing. So, of course, he's also available. Again, everybody brings with them their slightly different background in terms of this. Nida, Hilchos Nida is something which the basic halachos are pretty clear, but there are a lot of different areas where the Mesorah of the Rabban that you learned with will slightly change the answer that you're going to get. So it's worthwhile to stick with at least certain groups of poskim if possible, meaning Rav Orlean and I have both learned in YU, so we more or less have the same, you know, background when it comes to these kinds of things. I don't know some of the other Rabbanim, we spoke to Rav Hadaya once or twice, you know, his background in certain issues, not all issues, but certain issues is a little bit different. So just keep that in mind when you, you know, decide for yourself who your Rav is going to be. Keep in mind that it could be that in certain situations you might get a different answer if you ask one person over another. But again, every case is different, and the basic rules everybody agrees with. So if you have any more detailed questions about that, you can feel free to ask me or anybody else afterwards. Okay, let's go here. So the next section of the source sheet is Hargasha. Hargasha, as we mentioned, is the is what seems to be one of the requirements to become a Nida Mida Araisa. Let's take a look at source number 4 here. This is the Shulchan Aruch in Yoredeah Siman Kuf Pei Gimel. This is the first halacha in the Shulchan Aruch concerning Hilchos Nida. The Shulchan Aruch says as follows: Isha Shayata Dam Mimakora, a woman who has blood that comes out from the Makor. The Makor is what we call the uterus. Bein Be'ones, Bein Baratzon, whether it comes out Be'ones, totally unintentionally, whatever that means, Bein Baratzon, or intentionally. Again, we're not going to get into the question of exactly what that means. The bottom line is, anytime the blood comes out, Tamei'ah, she is Tamei. V'hu Shetargish B'Tziyaso, that is on condition that she feels something, which we call a Hargasha, at the time that the blood comes out. And when she feels that hargasha, that the blood has come out from the makom, from the makor, and begun to have gone out of the body, so she is tamei even though it hasn't actually left the body yet. Even if she only sees a small drop of blood like a mustard seed, this is based on the chumers of Chazal. This is not midoraisa here, but the Chazal decided it's called chumer de Rabbi Zeira. Again, we're not going to get into the details behind this now and exactly what level this is and how this came about. Some say that it was based on the minhag Yisrael of the women. Some people say that the rabbis decided this. Basically, the halacha is that you have to wait shiva nekiyim, even if you just see a small amount of blood, kacharga, like a mustard seed. Again, the practical application of this halacha, we will learn more about in the next week or two. Obviously, it's not so simple. Okay, this is not automatically true that every single time that somebody sees blood, that it's automatically going to be a problem. It's going to be subject to a number of other factors, which we will look at next week when it comes to the laws of kesamim, the laws of stains specifically. Somebody have a question? No? Okay. Good. So again, that's the basic halacha here. But again, as we'll see as we go on, make sure you come back in the next couple of weeks. And if you can't, then make sure to listen to it online to get the rest of the details so you're not thoroughly confused. You could come out of some of these shiurim somewhat confused if you only hear one or two of these shiurim and you don't hear the rest of them. So again, make sure that you hear the rest of them or speak to me or listen to them online, even if you can't actually come to them. Okay. So the question is, what exactly is this hargasha that we're talking about here? So this is a very, very interesting issue for a number of reasons. Basically, there's a machlokes in the Rishonim what exactly a hargasha is. It seems to be clear from the Gemara, according to at least the reading of most Rishonim, that a hargasha is something which is required to make a woman a nida on a deraisa level. It's not clear exactly what a hargasha is. How do you define a hargasha? What does this mean that she feels a sensation of the period of nida? Very strange. So let's take a look at source number 5, the Pischei Tshuva. The commentary on that section of Yoredeya says the following. There are three different types of hargashas that the post can discuss or define as being a hargasha. That would make her tummy midaraisa. Echad, the first type, that she feel her whole body shakes. This is the definition of the Rambam. That is the Rambam's definition. It's based on a Gemara Enida on Daf Gimel, I believe, that if she, basically her whole body has to tremble or shake. And if she feels that, that is considered to be the Torah idea of a hargasha. And that's what makes her tummy midaraisa, according to the Rambam. Without that, it could be that she's not tummy midaraisa. Beis, sheniftach makora. The second type of hargasha is when she feels that her makor, which again we define as the uterus, it begins to open. She actually feels that the makor is opening. Again, very, very interesting. Before we go on to the third one, we should note, if you haven't figured this out already, or if you don't remember this from your chassan classes, these two types of hargashas are very, very rare today, at least according to most accounts. Again, if you ask most women today, most women, though maybe not all, most women will tell you that they don't really feel either of these types of sensations when they have their period. Very, very uncommon, and that's going to create a very interesting question. And Hilchos Nida, at least in terms of the question of Doraisa versus Drabana, which we'll come back to in just a minute. But again, just be aware of that these two things are not the things that most women at least are aware of, at least consciously, on a regular basis. What's the third? What about Achronim? The third type is found in the Achronim. It's not found in the Rishonim, it's found in the Achronim. Kishamar Geshes Shadavar Lach Zav Mimena Bifnim. When she feels that something moist is coming out from her bifnim, from the inside. Meaning she feels not that the uterus is opening, but she feels something coming out from the makor to the outer part of her body. I'm Zevit Shiva's Noda Yehuda. Take a look at the Noda Yehuda who discusses this. He's the one of the ones who suggests this type of idea as a harkasha of a sefer chavas das simon kufsadi, etc. And then in the brackets he points out on the machuvas chasam sofer cholik alze the chasam sofer and many other achronim disagree with this. But kamachuvas the harich levar zivas davar lach lav harkasha and he and many other achronim basically hold that this idea of zivas davar lach of feeling some moisture coming out of the makor is not considered to be a halachic hargasha. And then the last line he just says that that's how he paskins halacha lemaisa, that's how he received the tradition from his rebbe Rav Nosson Adler. And today many achronim hold that this zivas davar lach is not considered to be a Torah type of hargasha. Just one other point here, and then we'll stop if anybody has any questions. Take a look at Rav Moshe in source number 6. Rav Moshe points out a very interesting, a very important point. He says that this is all true for the case when women feel something that is leaving their body. Val Masha Hergisha, meaning all the three types of hargasha we were talking about, something actually leaving the body. Val Masha Hergisha Shanasa Ben Rav Leha Lach, but the sensation that sometimes women or somebody might feel that something moist is oozing out between the legs, meaning not inside the body coming out of the body, but rather once it's already out of the body, going, you know, trickling down the body, from some type of liquid, that is not, says Rav Moshe, and most Achronim agree with this, That is not considered to be a hard gosha. Hard gosha is a sensation of some sort of the blood leaving the body. Again, dependent on the three aspects we had before. Rav Moshe says this type of idea of feeling something trickling down, out once it's already out of the body, that is not considered to be a halachic hargasha. So we have three options here. Again, the third one is questionable whether that's really a hargasha. The first two seem to be pretty clear in the halacha. These are the hargasha that we're talking about. The question is, today, when most women, again, not all, but most women do not feel these types of hargashas. The third type of hargasha is more common, by the way. The third one is, some women do say that they feel the third type of hargasha. But the question is, either if the third, those that don't feel the third type of hargasha, or if the third type of hargasha is not halachically valid, according to many poskim, what do we do today? Do we have the concept of a nida d'oraisa today if you don't actually have a hargasha? Everybody understand the question? A very, very interesting and very important question. Everybody agrees that that nida is tamei midrabanan. Everybody agrees that this is at least midrabanan. The question is it tamei d'oraisa? So this is a very, very, very interesting question. Many poskim say that maybe she's only tamei midrabanan bizon hazeh. If you don't have a hargasha, then that's it. Only tamei midrabanan. Some want to say that maybe she's still tamei midoraisa, and there are different versions of this that the poskim discuss. The Aruch HaShulchan discusses this a little bit. Rav Moshe has a tshuva about this. Many other achrim discuss this as well. Some want to say that maybe she's still tamei midoraisa, and the idea is basically that today, you know, women, maybe men also, but in this case, women are not necessarily so familiar with the sensations in their body. They can't always identify when these kinds of things are happening, and therefore we would assume today that Chazal were correct, and we just don't have the sensitivities that people used to have, and therefore we assume that there is a hargasha and people just don't know about it. That's one option for understanding that maybe we still have nida d'oraisa bizman hazeh, but again, there was a hargasha, we just don't always realize that it's there. The other option is to say that nida is d'oraisa, but hargasha is not necessarily the end-all and be-all of nida d'oraisa. Hargasha is basically something which is sort of an indicator. I mean, hargasha is the clear indicator that you know that the blood came from the body of the woman, and that creates a status of nida. But if you knew 100% that the blood came from the source, from the woman to begin with, even if you didn't have a hargasha, this second approach would say that maybe she's still tamei midoraisa, because we just look at the hargasha to tell you that she's a nida. And if you know 100% that she's a nida without the hargasha, then it should be the same thing. Halacha l'maisa nafkaminas, most nafkaminas, there aren't really so many nafkaminas. There are not so many nafkaminas between the approaches because everybody is going to agree on some level that we have tumas nida bizman hazeh. The question is just going to be whether it's d'oraisa or d'rabbanan. Because we're so machmir on many, many aspects of Hilchos Nida, because of the Isra Karis, the fact that it's such a severe punishment, so most of the halachas are going to remain the same, regardless of how you look at the halacha, whether it's d'oraisa or d'rabbanan. Most halachas will remain the same. There will be certain interesting aspects which will be a question, and perhaps a different approach is depending on this issue of d'oraisa or d'rabbanan, which as we get to it, as we go through the halachas, I'll point out one or two cases where there are some interesting questions of kulas that we do apply for nida midrabbanan or ksamim midrabbanan that perhaps, you know, might not be able to be applied midrabbanan, which we'll have to discuss. But again, those are the exceptions rather than the rule. The rule is that generally speaking, it doesn't, you know, this is more or less academic and not so, so practical. Okay, any questions so far up to this point?
Could you mention what is the reason why you need a hargasha? What's the source in the
Torah? Good. So that's a good question. So the Gemara, has a drasha from a pasuk. Unfortunately, I didn't bring the Gemara here. The Gemara has a drasha from a pasuk that it says. How does the pasuk go? It says dam. I think it says dam yabiv sarah, esovar, something like that. That there should be blood biv sarah in her basar. So again, I think the context of that pasuk is specifically ziva, the zav case, where again the woman is not during her period, but during the other time, not between her period. But it's assumed in the Gemara that that also applies to nida, and therefore the Gemara says that biv sarah means ach tarkish biv sarah, that she feels that the blood is in her basar, in her flesh, meaning that she feels that it's either her flesh, her makor is opening, or that the blood is coming out. That's the drush in the Gemara of Shmuel and nida, I think on Daf Min Zayin or so. Again, the Achronim have some discussion at the end of the day. The Gemara has a back and forth on that point a little bit. What's the maskana? But it's assumed, according to most Achronim, that is the requirement for Hagasha Midoraisa is based on that drasha of Shmuel. Okay.
If it's the drasha, then how can it be that with the what would the tzad be that if there's no Hagasha, but you know it comes to
good. Excellent question. So again, I didn't want to get into this now because it's a little tricky. The Gemara has a whole almus talking about that drasha there, and the Gemara says that really the case that the Gemara is talking about, we'll talk about next week, is a case of where the woman sits on the ground and she sees blood on the ground afterwards, and the Gemara says that she's taller. The Gemara says, how do you know she's Torah? Because of this idea of, you know, she has to feel it coming out. If she didn't feel it coming out, and she just sees it, then she's Tar. So the Gemara says, well, is that really true? And the Gemara has a back and forth the whole time. At the very end of the Gemara seems to suggest a different reason why she's Tar, not having to do with Hargasha. And there, Rashi seems to say that Shmuel's case had nothing to do with Hargasha at all. So some Achronim say from that, well, maybe Hargasha is not really such a requirement, meaning it's something which indicates that she's a Nidah, but maybe even without Hargasha, she still needs the Raisa. And many other Rishonim disagree. Other Rishonim say that's not what the Gemara is trying to say. Even if the Gemara is saying this point has nothing to do with Hargasha, we still know from other areas that that Hargasha is something which is required. Again, that's the Al Regalachas, that's what's going on there. I don't think we want to get into all the details here for now. Okay, very good. Let's go on. Okay, so that's the context of a Hargasha, which creating a Nida Raisa. Again, for now, we're talking about the period. So the Nida, the period, the menstrual period of the month, again, either Daraisa or Darabanan, is going to make her Tame. Let's go through some of the details of the next couple days of that menstrual cycle at this point. What we're going to do now, for the rest of today's year, however much we get through here, is the question of the 5 days. And then if you look on the next part of the source sheet, the Hefsek Tara and the Mokhtach. Those are going to be the points that we'll talk about this week. And then next week, we'll talk a little bit more about the period of Shiva Nakiyim, about some of the bedikos that are done, the checkings that are done, the rules of Ksamim. What is the difference between Ksamim, the stains? If you see a stain, how is that different from the regular flow, the regular Nida period? How does that work? Some of the leniencies for that we'll talk about, God willing, next week. Okay, for now, let's understand what is the basis for the 5 days. We said before that from the period when the woman waits, when a woman realizes that she becomes a Nida, so she's waiting 5 days until she can begin counting the Shiva Nakiyim. She can begin counting the 7 clean days, which will lead to her eventual purification. So what is this based on? So again, this is also a little bit of a complicated issue. We're going to try to just get the main points here so you have some sort of background. And we're not going to go into all the details and some of all the cases. Let's look at source number 7 quickly. Very, very interesting. Ha'poleta shichva zera mimeis tfirasa. Im hu tzoch vav onos l'shimusha so seras oso yom. Halacha is as follows. The whole basis for waiting the 5 days is actually based on the halacha of poleta shichva zera. That somebody, who basically a woman who has shichva zera, who has what we call seed, or some sort of emissions, again, from the man, either the sperm or the semen, whatever you want to call it, if that comes out from after being in the body of the woman, comes out afterwards along the way during the days that she's counting her days. So the halacha is if it's within vav ono 6 periods, which is basically 3 days, each ona is 12 hours. So if it's within a period of 3 full days, l'shimusha, from the time period that she had relations, so seras oso yom. Then the halacha is that that day that she is counting basically has to be stopped. It has to be, it's finished. She lost out. Basically, the halacha pulata shichva zera, that any time that shichva zera comes back out from the woman's body, that is considered to be, she's considered to be tsmeya. She's considered to be tame. So if that's the case, basically what we're afraid of, again, this is only true during the 3 days after the woman has had marital relations, because of the fact that we assume that the zera is only potent for about 3 days afterwards. Again, this is an interesting discussion in the Gemara as well as in the medical literature. But that's the halacha here. Lefichach, says the Shulchan Aruch, therefore, Hamishameshas mitasa, somebody who has marital relations, v'rasa achar kach upaska, and then she sees afterwards, she sees blood afterwards, and then she stops, okay, then she stops bleeding, okay, eina maschelas lispor shivanakim, she cannot begin to count shivanakim, ad sheyavru olal vov ono shlemos, until 6 complete 12-hour periods have passed. Why is that? Again, that's 3 full days. Shema tifla, because we're afraid that during those 3 days, she, some shechva zera, might come out, and therefore she might become tummy again in the middle, and we don't want to risk her starting and then having to stop again and start again. Therefore, lefichach eina maschelas lispor ad yom hei l'shimusha. Therefore, she does not begin counting the shiva nekiyim until the 5th day from the time period that she had relations. Again, he gives us an example here. Take the following example. Imsham shav motzei shavus. So the following case is the Shulchan Aruch case. Let's say that she had relations on Saturday night. Eina maschelas lispor ad yom hei. She cannot begin counting shiva nekiyim until Thursday. How does that work? So he explains. The kaimalon that we have established, ein shechva zera masriach ad shiavro la shisha onos shleimos. That shechva zera, the semen, cannot go bad until 6 full times, meaning 3 whole days have passed, me'es le'es, in time, basically exactly from the time that they had relations, 24, you know, whatever it is, 3 full days, right? 72 hours. V'im sham shav motzei shavus u'palta lil dalad, right? So if she, let's say she had relations on motzei shavus, and then the night of lil da, which is Tuesday night, meaning or liyom dalad, meaning Tuesday night is part of Wednesday. So Saturday night, from Saturday night to Sunday night, Monday night, Tuesday night is 3 days. Let's say that Tuesday night she had this poleta shechvazera. Kodem eishi mushab motzei Shabbos. Let's say on motzei Shabbos, Saturday night, she had relations at 11 o'clock. And then at 10 o'clock on Tuesday night, she is poleta shechvazera. So as the Shulchan Aruch points out, adain hi omedes besoch ona shishis l'shim mushab v'sosera. She's still within her last ona, and therefore that will mess up her days, her becoming clean, and therefore, because on Tuesday night she saw blood, that ruins the entire Yom Dalet, meaning Tuesday night and Wednesday are together, that's considered to be the fourth day, so all of Wednesday is already shot. Okay, that's already the fourth day, is already shot because of that specific situation. Therefore, we always say, Hilkach Yom Hei Yel Yishon Sfirah. Therefore, we always say, as a general rule, so you should never have any of these problems, we always say that you should start on Thursday morning, meaning if she had relations Motzei Shabbos, so then basically you're counting Saturday night, Sunday is one, Sunday night, Monday is two, Monday night, Tuesday is three, and then again, because of this problem that, you know, the night that she might have been Pilat Shechva Zera, Tuesday night, which is part of Wednesday, so we have to cut out Wednesday as well, and therefore you're waiting basically a full 4 days until Thursday when she can start counting Shiva Nikiyam. Now, just one or two other points that are important before. Yeah, I know, it's a little confusing. I had one or two points I was going to mention, but if you want to ask first before I clarify
them. What if there's a relationship with Monday Shabbos and then she sees on Monday?
Excellent question. Okay, so basically what's assumed here, and I think the Rama mentions this in the next section, which we'll get to. The custom that we have today is basically that when the Shulchan Aruch talks about, at least for Ashkenazim, I should take that back. For Ashkenazim, this is definitely the custom, that you don't look necessarily at when she had relations, you look at when the period starts.
Yeah.
Okay, that's the custom. The Shulchan Aruch seems to not look at that. The Shulchan Aruch seems to look at when she had relations, and for Sfaradim, it could be that in certain situations, there might be a little more room to be lenient about this. If you're Sfaradim, you need to ask your Sfaradi posek about this point. I won't necessarily be able to help you. Rav Avadi Yosef has in his sefer called Taras HaBayis, about Hilchos Nida, he does have some discussions about this, where he does seem to assume, at least in certain cases, he does seem to assume that maybe sometimes you actually can rely on that you look at the 4 days from the time that she had relations and not from when she had her period. But we're machmir, the Ashkenazim certainly, and maybe Sfaradim also sometimes are machmir, that we look at the time period when she begins her period, because again, we don't want to run into problems. We don't want to get confused. We don't want to get messed up. So, you know, we basically make the bottom line that you look at when she had her period. There may be certain very rare exceptions, which we're not going to have time to go into tonight, but there may be certain rare exceptions which we can be a little bit more lenient about this. Again, for now, we're just going to follow the regular rule that according to the Shulchan Aruch, that you have to have these 4 days. Meaning the first day, again, let's take this just to back up one other step. Any day that the woman sees her period, that she has, that the Nida period begins, that day or night is considered to be the first day of the 5 days. Okay, so let's say the Shulchan Aruch's example is Motzei Shabbos. Let's say the example is Monday. Okay, let's say she sees on Monday afternoon. So Monday is already going to be the first of the 5 days. Okay, Monday, even though she only sees in the afternoon, Monday is already considered to be day one. Okay, Tuesday will be day two. Wednesday will be day three. Thursday will be day four. According to the Shulchan Aruch, after day four, after Thursday, you can you have to add on the, again, what do we say again? You have to add on, no, that's going to work in that case. So then basically she can start on, according to the Shulchan Aruch, she could start the next day on day five with her Shiva Nikiyam. According to the Rama, Ashkenazim or Machmir. Let's read in the next section here. Hopefully we won't get too confused. It's a little tricky here. We'll try to read it inside, and if it doesn't work, then we'll just say it outside. The Rama says, Hagar, Tifsok Yom Dalam L'Ace Erev. So she should do her Hafsek Tara on Wednesday L'Ace Erev, towards evening time, meaning right before it gets dark on Wednesday, the Yom Hei O L'Minyan. And then the Thursday can count already as the first day of Shiva Nikiyam. That's an example of the Shulchan Aruch. Now, the Rama adds another point. The Yeshikah, so Sheyesh L'Hamtin Od Yom Echad. The Rama says, some people say that you should really wait another day, an extra day. The Hainu, Shalotas Chalimnos Ad Yom Hashishi, V'Huyia Yom Rishon L'Sfirasa. That she has to wait until the sixth day to begin counting Shiva Nikiyam. Why is that? So this is a little bit of a confusing point here, but let's try to understand it. The Chayshinan were afraid, Shema Tishamesh B'Yom HaRishon Bein HaShmashos V'Tisfor Shehu Yom. We're afraid maybe what might have happened is the following. That maybe on Sunday, she's going to have relations, Bein HaShmashos, during twilight. She's going to think that, let's say, on Sunday, for example, again in this example, Bein HaShmashos, she's going to think that it's still daytime, okay? And she's going to think that it was daytime when she had relations, and then she saw her period at night, and then she could start that, you know, that being the first day. The Efshar Shulayla, but really maybe she wasn't sure and she made a mistake. Really, the time period that she had relations was really nighttime already. If the time period that she had relations was at night, v'intaspa limnos b'yom chamishi, if that happens, let's say, on Saturday night, so then if she begins to count on Thursday, yeah, toch shisha onos l'shimusha, it will be within the shisha onos, within the six periods from l'shimusha, from the time period that she had relations. Because, again, if she had relations, really, she thought it was still daytime, but really it was nighttime.
Exactly,
if it was nighttime.
What exactly is the cutoff period? What is considered ben ashmoshes?
Good, so that's a good question. That we'll have to talk about.
Is it further than that?
Good. So ben ashmoshes is really a suffix. Okay. We paskin today that ben ashmoshes is still really considered to be a suffix. For most of these kinds of things, we're basically going to be machmer until the time that it's seisuk chav, until it's nighttime. Okay. But let's say again, she was assuming maybe in our version, what we would say today, our version would be she thought it was already nightfall. Okay. Really, it wasn't. I'm sorry. She thought it was still daytime. Okay. She thought it was either ben ashmoshes, or let's say she thought it was before shkia that they had relations, which again we know is not so recommended. But halachically, you know, it's not usher. We generally recommend not having relations during this time of the, when it's not nighttime. But let's say again, she thought it was daytime, and therefore she thought the nighttime period. She thought that she could already count, you know, the nighttime period as her next, you know, her starting period of the five or the 4 days. And really, she made a mistake. Really, she had relations at night. So therefore, if she had relations at night, so then she's got to delay her six periods by, you know, another period. Meaning the relations was at night, she's got to wait till the next day to start her shisha onus, to start her six periods. And therefore, she's going to get messed up. That we say that maybe she can, she can do, again, if you start, if we say that Saturday night, Sunday is day one, Sunday night, Monday is day two, Monday night, Tuesday is day three, she's going to get confused. And Tuesday night, when she should be, you know, able to, or Tuesday afternoon, she could do her hefsek tara, she's going to think that that's fine. But really, that's still considered to be, Tuesday night is still considered to be within her ona of 72 hours from the time she had relations, and therefore Wednesday is also shot. Therefore, the Rama says that she has to wait an extra day because of that. And what ends up coming out, again, without getting into all the rest of the complications here, what ends up coming out is you have to wait 5 days, not 4 days. Okay, so according to the Rama, the ways that it's going to work is going to be as follows. Again, we paskin today, we hold that it's based on the time period that she had, that she became a nida. So if she became a nida on Saturday night, let's say Saturday night or Sunday. So Saturday night, Sunday is going to be day one. Monday is going to be day two. Tuesday is going to be day three. Wednesday is going to be day four. Thursday is going to be day five. That's the extra day that Rama's talking about, just in case, so you don't have this confusing case. You got to wait. You got to start on Friday. Okay, that's what he says, and that's how Ashkenazim paskin in general. You need to have the 5 days, again, starting from the day of the period until the end of the fifth day, and the fifth day is the day you can do your hefsek tara, and then on the next day, which is the sixth day, that's when the shiva nikiyum can begin. Okay, we're not going to go through all the rest of the complicated, you know, the details here or whatever. But are there any questions on the general points here? Just the general point of how this works.
What's the point of that 5 day wait? Because they're worried about that it won't be a shiva nikiyum. Holding a shiva nikiyum would be clear for 7 days.
Right.
What,
so we're afraid that
shiva nikiyum straight away.
So you, again, so the point is that the Chazal decided that you can't do that. Because we're afraid, we don't want her to be in a situation that she starts shiva nikiyum right after her period, and then, you know, the next day or 2 days later, she sees she's pelesa shechva zera. Okay? And that's going to be sosar that day, meaning she's going to have to stop counting that day, she's going to mess her up. Second?
Practically.
Correct. Now, there's another practical issue also. Today, it's, I think, you know from experience that it usually takes at least 4 days for the blood to stop flowing. You won't have, most times, most women, you will not have, you know, less than 4 days that she's actually going to stop having blood. So practically today, it's not really so relevant, because you won't have most times less than 5 days when she can actually start. She's still bleeding in most cases. Okay, so it's really, today it's not so. But again, if it would be a case that, you know, on the fourth or fifth day, she would stop bleeding, so then this would be a question. Again, Ashkenazim are going to be machmir. Sfaradim are generally more makel. Sfaradim generally hold that you only keep 4 days, and on the fifth day you can already start. Again, there will be certain situations where, for infertility reasons or other types of cases like that, maybe if one of the days is Tisha B'Av, Yom Kippur, is, let's say, the first day before her period, that they couldn't have relations anyway. It could be, in some of those cases, there's room to cut off the fifth day and just keep 4 days. Again, we're not going to have time to get into all those situations now, but there are a few uncommon exceptions to the rule for Ashkenazim of keeping 5 days, and you can suffice with 4 days.
Is there a problem with keeping longer? So let's say you forget a day, you weren't sure, whatever.
For the 5 days or the shiva nikiyum that we're talking about?
Either or.
Again, so shiva nikiyum we'll have to talk about in the next session. Okay, well, you'll ask again next time. For the 5 days, there's no problem with adding on an extra day. Meaning, if she forgot to do her hefsek tara, let's say on the fifth day, so it's not a problem, but it's not appropriate. Meaning, really, we don't want the husband and wife to be separated for longer than they need to be. That's not a good thing. And it's highly discouraged unless there's other factors that need to be considered. So in general, that should not happen. But is there anything halakhically prohibited about it? No, there's nothing halakhically usur about it. Okay.
Yeah, and if she sees blood after Shkia but before it says the Kalchavim, you count that day as one day one?
Again, what do we... Tell me the case. Now, this is still part of her regular period?
Mm.
So, you know, she sees blood during Tzeis HaKohavim. So, if that's her...
No, before Tzeis HaKohavim. After Shkia, before Tzeis
HaKohavim. Okay, so we'll talk about right now, actually, in the next 5 minutes or so before we finish up. The case is if she started her, you know, if she had her period, and now we're on the fifth day, and she's done her Hefsek Tara in the afternoon, then that, if she sees blood during Minas Shmashas, that's a problem. Okay, let's talk, we'll do right now. Okay, we're going to do sources 8 and 9 now, and then we'll stop for tonight. Okay, what's the Hefsek Tara? So let's read inside. This is, the Shulchan Aruch here is talking about a Zava. But again, we apply this to a Nida as well. This idea of Hefsek Tara and Shiva Nekiyim. Shiva Yamim Shah Zava Soferes. The 7 days that a Zava and we hold today a Nida counts. Shiva Nekiyim Aschilim Macharas Yom Shepaskabo. Begin from the next day after she stops. Okay, again, our version today is after the 5 days, we check her, and then the next day she can start Shiva Nekiyim. Kach Mishpata, here's the case. Im Tira Beis Yomim Ogivol Upaskal Miliros. If she sees 2 days or 3 days, and then she stops, again, this is in the context of Ziva now, of the Zava case. We're going to apply that to Nida. In our case of Nida, the application is basically, if she sees blood for, let's say, again, 3 or 4 days, or again, now we have to keep the 5 days anyway, so she has 5 days, she stopped. Bodekas Biyom Shepaska. She can check, she can do a bedika on the day that she stops, Kadesha Tifso Patara. So she can basically do a Hefsek Tara to basically separate and say that now she is clean. Okay? This bedika should be close to Bein Hashmashos, close to sun, to twilight. And this is how we hold the Chachila. If she didn't do a bedika, in the end of the day, she only did one in the morning, and that's also okay. So again, let me just summarize this so we make sure we understand what we're talking about here. Again, so for the Nida case, we have our 5 days. Hopefully, by the end of the fifth day, the woman has stopped bleeding. Okay, if she has not stopped bleeding, you can't do this yet. Okay, if she still bleeds for another day or two, you can't continue until she stopped bleeding. What you can do is if you want to try on the end of the fifth day, so you're going to do what we call, again, the Hefsek Tara. The point of the Hefsek is you take a bedika cloth, okay, take a clean bedika cloth, and basically she's going to take that and insert that into that area, and she's going to be checking around, rotating it around there to check to see if there is still blood that is in her system. If she sees on the bedika cloth that there is blood, then obviously she is not completely finished yet, and she has to wait another day and try again, okay? If it is clean, I mean, if she doesn't find anything tummy on the bedika cloth, then that is considered to be a valid Hefsek Tara, and then we move on to the next stage, which we'll see in a second.
Okay. Can you explain why, if she checks in the morning, like why isn't that just good enough?
Oh, so good. So let's. Okay, that's what I was about to say. Okay. That. That's what I was about to do.
Okay,
so again, there's a discussion about this in the Gemara. What the Shulchan Aruch here is giving us is the bottom line of Pesach Halacha. Me'ikar hadin, a bedika that's done any time during the fifth day is going to be a valid Hefsek Tara if it's clean. Okay, she could do it any time during the day. What the Shulchan Aruch says, l'chadchila, is that you should try to ideally do it as close as possible to twilight, meaning as close as possible to Beit HaShemashos, to Shkia, and the reason is obvious, because if you do your bedika, let's say at 10 o'clock in the morning, you know, you still have, you know, who knows how many hours, 10 hours left the rest of the day, that it could be that she's still seeing blood, and you won't necessarily know about it if you didn't do a bedika. So ideally, what we paskin is l'chadchila, the best thing to do is to do it as close as possible to Shkia, so that you know that if you did it very close to Shkia, that it's pretty clear that she is not that she is clean. If there's no blood that you see on the bedika cloth, that's l'chadchila what's done. Now, just be aware that again, sometimes people forget. Sometimes people are busy. People are at work. They're busy with kids. Practically speaking, the best thing to do is the following. The best thing to do is make sure that she does a bedika in the morning, at some point in the morning after she gets up, or at some point later in the day in the morning, to make sure that she is covered. Okay, so she did her bedika in the morning. At the end of the day, towards Shkia, she should try to do another bedika, because that's what the Shulchan Aruch says, l'chadchila, she should do another one to make sure that she is clean. But at the end of the day, if she forgot or she didn't have time, so then in that case, she has what to rely on because she already did it in the morning. Okay, that's the mila of doing it that way. If you didn't do it in the morning, so if she forgets in the afternoon and she doesn't have time, she's got to wait another day. So that's the practical advice that's usually given to women to make sure that they don't lose out here, to do it in the morning, and then if they have, then they'll try to do it again in the afternoon. Okay.
It has to be of the morning.
Yeah, I mean, it should be after. After
it can't be before Alos.
Correct, correct. It ideally should be after Alos Hashachar. Really should be after Netzach Chama, but after Alos Hashachar probably also would be good if she can't do it before after that time. That's the idea of the Hefsek Tara. The Hefsek Tara is very important. This out of the Bedikas that are done, this is the most important one. Okay, because this is the one that's telling her that she can start the Shiva Nekiyah and that she has no more blood. So generally speaking, it's usually they wash the area beforehand and they do a very, very careful bedika. We call the Chorin of Istakan. We'll talk more about this hopefully probably next time. Very, very careful, all the areas to try to check it out. Now, this is the first case where I can just remind you that it's very important that she's not sure if she's tummy or not, that she should ask a Shiloh. Okay, don't wait 7 days to do this. If she's not sure, if she looks her bedika cloth and she's not clear, well, is this a problem or not? So then she should ask within a day or two. Within a day or two, she should bring it and find out whether it's okay or not. Just because she sees something, some sort of color on the bedikah cloth, as we'll see in the next two shiurim, that does not automatically mean that she's tameh. Certain colors are tameh. So if it's closer to the brown color, which we'll discuss more, she might be okay. Even though she says, "Oh, I saw something. Oh no, it's a problem. I have to wait." It's not always so simple. You have to make sure that it's definitely a problem before she waits another day. So ideally, it's best if she's not sure to bring it to the Rav. Again, we'll discuss a little more details about exactly what the color has to look like, so you at least have some background before we go on.
Assuming that in the Kiyam, where does it actually say that the woman has to do a proper bedikah like that with the bedikah cloth? Why can't it be that she knows that it stops with the grusha?
Say again?
The actual street running of
right.
The blood.
Right, yeah.
Why does it have to be so precise in terms of searching for it? You know what I'm
because otherwise you don't know for sure that the flow has stopped. That's what the halacha is, that we have to do the Hefsek Tara basically to teach you that to make sure that the flow has stopped. Otherwise you have no idea what's happening. We got to be very careful with this, meaning you don't mess around with these kinds of things. So.
Yeah.
And we are saying, I just wanted to clarify,
yeah.
If she checks at 10 a.m. and she's completely clean, there's still a possibility that at 4 p.m. when she checks again, at that point she may not be clean. Is that
yes,
that's what you're saying?
Correct. Okay. Correct. And that's why lechatchila she should check in the afternoon as well. She should do a bedikah in the afternoon.
I mean, it could be at 4 p.m. she checks and she's clean, and it could be at 6 after Shkia she really was not clean. If she
so that's
again.
So that's what we're gonna say right now. Okay. So that's what we say in the next part here.
The next day she's clean. Should we think that the day before she's definitely clean?
Not necessarily.
That's what you're saying. It's not true.
Not necessarily.
That's
we'll see. We'll see in a second. We'll see in a second. Just one other point here. Just mention that if, let's say, she does a bedikah, let's say at 3 o'clock in the afternoon, and it's not clean, it's not good. So she has another option. She doesn't have to automatically wait another day. She can wait
again.
Exactly. She can wait 20 minutes or half an hour. Don't do it too close afterwards because she probably needs to wash herself off a little bit, and you have to wait a few minutes after washing yourself. And also, you don't want to irritate the area too much. That's also a problem.
Yeah.
If you irritate the area, then it could bleed more, so you have to be careful. But if you wait, let's say another 20 minutes, half an hour, if you have enough time to do that, so then she could do another bedikah, and if the second one comes out clean, then that one would be valid, even if the first one was not. Does that make sense? Again, you got to be careful with it. Don't wait too. You have to be careful not to do it
once
too
she
after.
Once she shouldn't check again.
Second.
Once she gets a clean one,
correct.
She should
correct.
Be checking again.
However, this is the last one. We'll end with this tonight. This is the concept of the moch dachuk. This
right.
is the last one. What is the moch dachuk? Look at source number 9. Lo'olo nyilmar adam lahachmir l'chachila besoch beiso shetehe bodekes biyom hefzik tarasa b'moch dachuk. A person should always teach the people in his house, meaning his wife, to check on the day of her hefzik tara with a moch dachuk. What is the moch dachuk? He says, she'yehesham kol bein hashmashas. It should be there all of bein hashmashas. It should be there during the entire twilight period. Shezu bedika motziah midei safek. Because this bedika basically takes her out of the possibility of safek. Meaning in this case, if she put it a moch dachuk during the entire period from sunset, from shkia, until tesa kochavim, then the halacha is that helps make sure, we are 100% sure that she does not have any blood remaining at this point, and therefore that's okay. So, bottom line, this is again not from the Gemara, this is a Chumrah in the Rishon, from the Rashba. So according to the Shulchan Aruch, quoting the Rashba here, the Chumrah is that ideally you should take a moch dachuk, which is usually either another bedikah cloth, or again sometimes people can use tampons also. For regular bedikahs, we'll discuss next time, tampons are not recommended. For moch dachuk, because it's in for an extended period of time, a tampon might definitely work. She should put it in shortly before Shkia, like a couple minutes before Shkia, put it in, keep it in there during Bein HaShemashos, and then take it out. How long do you have to keep it in there for? So again, there are different opinions here. In Eretz Yisrael, certainly there's room to take it out after about 20 minutes or so. She can take it out. 20 to 25 minutes is more than enough for that. And then afterwards, she'll check it. If there's a problem with it, then again, either she might have to wait another day, or she should show it to a rav if she's not sure. If it's clean, then she can move on to the Shiva Nekiyah the next day. Just mention that sometimes the moch tocho can also irritate the body, and if you find that it's irritating, either because you find that it's, you know, she finds blood on the moch tocho, or she knows in general that her, that area gets irritated very easily, so then she should ask a rav. But oftentimes the psak will be that you can do away with the moch tocho because of the fact that it's only a chumra from the rishonim. If it's causing excessive problems, that's the first thing that's going to go, that the rav will probably say, okay, don't do the moch. If she finds that the moch was a problem one night, then often what will happen the next day is that the rav will say, and this is why it's always worthwhile to ask, to wait the next day. The next day, do a hefsek tara, but don't do the moch again. Why not? Because you saw last night the moch actually hurt you rather than helped you, so don't do it again tonight. Okay, that's a very, very important point to remember for cases when, you know, the area gets a little bit irritated, or cases where things are, you know, a little bit more difficult, let's say not out of the ordinary, cases where, you know, maybe there, she's spotting a lot there, she's having trouble, difficulty becoming clean. That's one of the first things that's going to go, that we would say, that maybe you can get rid of the moch tachak, even if you've got to do the other bedikas and the hefsek tara, but the moch you can do away with. But again, that's something which is important to speak to a rav, so you can't always make that determination on your own. Okay, any other questions for now? Good. Okay, so we're going to stop here for tonight. And again, next week we'll continue, God willing, with the Shimon Akim and some other aspects of the Bedikos as we move forward here. Okay. Shkoyach.